Texas First Cast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to First Cast. This is Matt Crass from 358.
This is Adam Richards from 1341.
This is Joseph Matt, alumni of 384.
And this is Jeff Rodriguez, mentor on 173.
We've got a great show for you today. As you know, build season's just recently closed, and we all shipped our robots off, some of us in tears. Adam. Some of us glad to see it go, like me. Unfortunately, people like Joe didn't have a robot, so they could not share in our joy. We have team updates 11 and 12 on deck today. Joe, do you want to tell us about them?
Yeah, sure. 11 really doesn't cover very much. Just some stuff about the shooting mechanisms must fit with inside the robot body and can't touch others. But the more interesting one is team update number 12, which contains a lot of updates to the game. Previously, we talked about if robots shot outside of the field, what would happen. Well, this goes into detail about giving out 10-point penalties if the ref deems a robot unsafe, such as shooting balls at the head ref or any other refs or anybody in the field or anything of that nature.
Team Update 11 was just an emphasis on the old rules, but it surprised a lot of teams because they weren't paying that close attention the first time around. A lot of people are now complaining about it, and they're trying to blame first for their own error. So this is a situation similar to last year where teams didn't read the rulebook carefully enough, and now we have a whole bunch of teams violating the rules. What do you guys think on that?
I think the main reason they put it out is because of basically what they saw at the scrimmages the weekend before ship, and they're basically just trying to emphasize it so that everyone is prepared at the regionals and doesn't get caught off guard.
I agree with you. But the rules were there from the beginning, and I saw some people complaining that First had quote-unquote dropped the ball when they didn't. All they did was remind you something that people should have been watching in their own. And just, you know, if you're not going to read the rules carefully enough to send your robot the first time around, you know, you're not allowed to complain when you have to make changes like that. What do you guys think?
I agree, Matt. I mean, it says your robot must be 28 by 38 by 60, and that means the whole robot, not just the part that drives and not the shooting mechanism. They mean the whole robot. So this is just a restating of the rules, and anybody who missed this was trying to do a little skirting around, which really shouldn't have been done.
Well, this year, like we mentioned in previous episodes, I'd like to say First did a great job. There are very few updates that really dealt with significant rule changes. And, I mean, the fact is, I think they might have just, besides emphasizing the rules, I think they put this update out just because normally they would have a rule change, but they didn't, but they still put the update out. So I'm proud of First, though. They did a good job. There are no major rule changes. They just emphasized previous rules. And I hope it's a good season. That was really crappy. Let me try. What? Adam, would you stop it?
Okay, Matt, it's not my fault that you can't deal with random stuff going over Ventrilo.
It throws me off my thought track. Anyways, like I was saying, so First did a great job with the rules this year. There weren't a lot of rule changes. I'm happy with them for that. I hope things stay that way. I'm sure we'll see a change here or there during the regionals, but otherwise it looks like it's a pretty solid game. What do you guys think?
No, I agree. I don't think there's going to be a change, though. I mean, after seeing footage from scrimmages and things, I don't think there's really anything that they need to change about the game. I think they did a real good job first time around.
The only thing that bothered me was it seems like a lot of teams that were most angry about this rule update were the ones that were trying to find a loophole to gain an advantage, and that kind of bothers me. The rules were clear. The intent of the rule was clear. I glanced over the rule book, I admit. I didn't pay that much attention to it since I was only programming this year, and I still understood that it had to be well shielded and it had to be within the confines of the robot. So I don't think anybody has an excuse, and I think some people are just trying to circumvent the rules.
Agreed. I mean, they also showed that video at a kickoff of the softball shooter, so, I mean, teams knew what they had to do.
Well, to cover more stuff in Team Update 12, there's also an update on field damage, which basically says that if they see you damaging any part of the field, you will have to reinspect. You'll have to have your robot reinspected before the robot will allow to compete again. And some information on being offsides, such as that you can only have two robots on their defensive half of the field. Any thoughts there, Matt?
The field damage. there's really only one part of the field you can damage, of course, and that's the actual poof balls. And that's going to be a gray area, because how do you define damaged? Because they're not going to remain in pristine condition. But, I mean, you know, do you wait till it's completely bald, or mostly bald, or ripping apart? How do you define damage beyond use for a poof ball?
Well, I think the teams are... I think that the refs are actually going to notice when the balls start getting shaved by one team shooter, that it's really starting to destroy the field. But, I mean, if occasionally a shooter might just strip off a slight bit of the coating on it, it should be fine. But if it's, like, the whole ball every single time, they're going to have to call the team out.
Remember, they also, some teams have some mechanisms that suck up the balls, so that could do some damage not only to the balls, but also to the...
No, I'm not entirely sure how it would damage the floor. They should never be coming in contact with the floor, but I haven't seen all the mechanisms here. I can't be sure about that one.
Well, that's in my team's loading mechanism. If we try to go up the ramp forwards, we actually hit the ramp with a loading mechanism. We actually have to go up the ramp backwards so it doesn't smash into the diamond blade.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of teams who kind of use their frame to knock up against the ramp and get up, because the ramp is at such a steep angle this year.
Yeah, I mean, I saw videos from the scrimmage, and I've heard about some robots that just went up the ramp, and then they are on their side. I know when we were test driving our robot, we were going up the ramp, and it started to tilt. Our driver backed up, and it slammed down, and then he pushed it full forward. He managed to get up the ramp. So it looks like speed's important. If you're going up too slow, you're going to fall over. But one thing nobody really thought about, once you get up on that ramp, you're pretty much stuck up there. I don't think we ever successfully drove our robot down the ramp without tipping it. It's too steep.
I can't even count the number of teams that went over on their back during the UTC scrimmage. It seemed like it was almost 1 in 4, just because there's so much activity around the base of the ramp. I also noticed in Update 12, the definitions of basically of the robot contact between two robots, and more specifically the one talking about contact outside the bumper zone, and if it's incidental. And I think that's mainly because if you have a robot up on top of the ramp and he comes off and plays defense on a robot that's trying to shoot, you know, because the ramp is so high, they're going to end up contacting outside of the bumper zone. It was a fairly often occurrence at the scrimmages.
So, Jeff, did you work with Rage during the build season this year?
Yes, I did.
How was that? I mean, any funny moments?
When you got high school kids and robots, there's always funny moments.
Yeah, did your robot ever try to run over the high school kids?
Not really. Fortunately, we have... Our drivers are fairly skilled. I mean, they have some practice from off-season competitions and stuff. And our practice field is kind of segregated from any high traffic areas, so there's not really a whole lot of people that can get hit with the robot on accident. Poof balls, on the other hand.
Part of our targeting test was to make it lock onto various colors, one of which was red. Unfortunately, one of our teammates walked by wearing a red sweatshirt. It was bad.
Rapid fire?
No, single shot, and it missed him, but he jumped out of the way and he hurt himself.
Ouch, yeah. When we were testing our original shooter design, one of my teammates was just picking up a ball that had lodged under it. He didn't really realize that I just dropped a ball into the shooter.
Oh. All right, I can beat that. Testing the shooter, before we even had a robot base, this thing's clamped to a table, and they're just hand-feeding it balls. And I bent over to pick one up, and I hear them yell, "Look out!" So my first instinct was to pop my head up to see what was going on. Poof ball right in the face, sent me stumbling back onto my ass.
Were you wearing your safety glasses?
Sure. Of course I was. Yeah, safety. Uh-huh.
Actually, I found out something pretty bad about safety glasses. I realize that when you get hit in the ball without I realize that when you get hit in the face with a poof ball, wearing safety glasses, you can actually do more damage to your face. I was wearing safety glasses when they were doing human player tryouts. One of the balls was headed straight towards me, hit me square in the face, bruised my nose. When I wasn't wearing safety glasses, they would just bounce straight off and do no damage to me.
That's interesting.
One of our team members actually had a successful use of forehead protectors with a poof ball.
I've had many successful uses of forehead protectors, actually. If you think about it, I think I've been saved more times by having them on my forehead than over my eyes, but... You know, as soon as I adopt that permanently, my luck will change, of course. So, This year, Jeff, you were going to tell us about the UTC Regional. Isn't it someplace new this year?
Yeah, this year, usually it was held, used to be at the Meadows Music Theater. This year it's going to be at the Connecticut Convention Center, which is right in downtown Hartford. And I've been there a couple times now for some conventions, and it's a great facility. I mean, there's plenty of room. In the Meadows, the pits were kind of cramped. The field didn't have very good viewing area. But, I mean, the pits are going to be wide open here. The field is going to have plenty of stands around it. I mean, you basically have enough room to have the first competition, a VEX competition, and a LEGO League demonstration all in the same vicinity. So it's going to be a real good regional this year.
That's very exciting, and this will also be my first year at the UTC Regional, so I'm looking forward to it. The facility, how is it on things like food, walking around, parking lots, stuff like that? Some facilities I've been to have been very good about that. Some, it's like a trip across the Gobi Desert to get lunch. So what can you tell us about the convention center?
There's a parking garage attached right to the convention center, so I imagine most people will park in there. I'm not sure about the price, because at my conventions we got parking passes. As far as food, you're basically in downtown Hartford, so you have the food at the venue, which I believe is reasonably priced and not bad. Since you're in a city, you'll have some good, you know, street vendors with hot dogs and sandwiches and things like that. I'm not all that familiar with the downtown Hartford area, though, so I can't really say for sure. But, I mean, for teams staying in the area, Manchester is a couple minutes down the highway, and there's all sorts of restaurants there and stores, and, I mean, there's enough to do in the area.
Oh, sounds like a very interesting regional. I can't wait. One thing, thanks to Jeff, actually, we've been in contact with the UTC regional coordinators, and there's a slight possibility, no promises, but we may have a live performance for you guys at the UTC regional. So hopefully that'll work out, and most likely it'll be on Saturday. I don't know when. Jeff, anything to say on that?
So, Matt, what are you going to be performing? Is it going to be song and dance routine?
No, I've got something planned. It's a surprise, though, and not even Adam knows about it, or Joe, or Jeff. So those of the UTC region will definitely get to see it first, you know, if our luck holds out with this.
I hope it's not Chip and Dale.
Ah, crap.
All right, hey, guys. I'm not normally one to do a self-plug here, but I've actually been developing First Scouter Network over the past couple weeks, and it's been turning out pretty well. Right now we're waiting on someone to finish a layout, but by the time of this episode release, it should be done, and there should be a demo out somewhere. So keep your eye on it. Really, it just does a lot of match scouting, team scouting, the statistics based upon your matches, gives basic info as to which teams are better, who will probably win the next match, stuff like that. So keep a lookout for it, and does anyone have any questions?
Well, I have one. The scouting interface, I mean, how exactly do you do it? Like, let's say you're watching a match, and you see what the robots are doing, you know, you see the shooters, whatever, you know, how do you put that data into the scouting program?
All right, well, every regional host is going to come with an administrator account. That'll allow them to add moderators and whatever, and data collectors. Their data collectors will be able to go to a little form where they can just click every time one team scores a ball into a goal, or hit a penalty point. The game's split up between autonomous and regular gameplay, so that each team is easily able to differentiate between what the robot's doing and what period.
We've tried using a computer-based scouting system in the past, Adam, and I've always found that basically the biggest flaw is, you know, the quickness of data entry. It seems like it's almost faster to just jot it down on a piece of paper. Is it going to be easy with the First Scouting Network?
Yeah, actually it is. Normally, like, you have like a form, like you see, you just type in, you have to keep typing the number, clearing the field, then typing in a new number if you're doing it. All you have to do is just keep switching between plus or minus buttons that just add to the score. If you were to miss several at once, or you need to correct it, go back, you could manually edit the field if you so choose.
Oh, one more thing I wanted to bring up. Adam seems to have the misguided notion that his UCF regional is better than my UTC regional, so we gotta prove him wrong. So we're gonna have a little contest. all the FirstCast fans in Florida going to the UCF Regional have to find him and sign a piece of paper. And I want all you fans up there at UTC to come find me, and we're going to see who can get more signatures at the Regional. And it better be UTC, guys. I want to win this one. I'm not letting Adam win again.
You know, I've actually got a better idea. How about we do a little photo contest here? Whoever can get the most photos with people at a Regional on their camera will win.
All right, that's good. All right, so there's your opportunity, everyone. Whoever, any of you who want to take a picture with the better FirstCast host, you can find me in Team 358's pit at the UTC Regional.
Yeah, and you'll find me somewhere between the stands and UCF, the upper atrium, where apparently there was a limbo game between 79 and 233 last year, which I want to get in on, the driver stations, or my pitch.
All right.
Is this a sheer number of photos or a number of people in the photos? Do group shots count?
Number of people with you. Like, you can't just be randomly standing in a picture and count that you're in the pit, and that the 300 people standing behind you count in the picture. It's people that stand with you necessarily to take the picture. Like, people stand in the same direction next to you, shaking your hand, jumping
in your
around,
vague
whatever.
Direction, yes. And they have to be unique people. You can't have 300 pictures with the same person, either.
Yeah, you can't also use random people from your team to buff that number, or from your school who you just drag to the Regional. Those don't count.
I'm sorry, Adam. I know you needed that advantage, but it's noble of you to give it up.
Oh, yeah, you know, I only have a 20-person team.
Anyways. So, unfortunately, we also have some bad news for you. I know a lot of people were looking forward to our John and Karthik debate sessions, but due to John's busy schedule, he's had to cancel on us for this season. He made a great effort. It just wasn't working out for him, but I hope he takes his newfound free time from me not nagging him to go and make sure we have a great season. He's working with IFI, as you know, and he's going to be helping you out when stuff breaks, I'm sure. So, you know, let's wish him luck, and I'm sorry he couldn't be with us this season. We'll get him on here eventually, though. But we do have something in his place. Team 341, Miss Daisy, proprietor of the Team in a Box kit, has put together a little show for you. It's sort of their own little podcast, and it's going to be as part of our show from now on. So without further ado, DaisyCast.
Stand by for DaisyCast.
Hi, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Allie.
And you're tuned into DaisyCast, a podcast within FirstCast, designed with the rookie in mind. This week, we're going to be talking about the time that's very vital for your team's success, the time from ship date to your first competition.
Believe it or not, build season is only the beginning of the work. There are some things to do that will keep you busy and help prepare you and your team for an exciting and fun-filled competition season. First, it is helpful to know your robot in and out. Knowing the parts of the robot, the aspect of the game your team is going to score with, and your main attributes are some of the things to consider.
This is going to be really helpful for when teams come around to scout you. You're going to want to tell them everything you can tell them about your robot so that you have a better chance of getting picked by that team in the alliance selections.
A helpful way to inform other teams about your robot is to create a brochure or pamphlet that lists your attributes in an organized fashion.
It's also a good idea to spice it up with some sweet pictures. I know I love to look at visuals.
Another thing to do is prepare your tool crates and spare parts for the trip. Label the crates so that people can see what they include without messing things up inside.
I know we're all guilty of messing up the tool crates looking for something. I've done that, you know, scrounging through the tool crates looking for some zip ties. But if we had a list, it would have been very easy to find them.
In fact, FIRST has a checklist of things that should be packed and brought to competitions. It can be found in the manual of section 7.16, Team Checklist. You can also create a checklist of your own for specific items that you may need.
It also might be a good idea to have a checklist for every time your robot goes out to competition for special things that you may need to do, such as if you don't have a compressor on your robot, you might need to charge up your air tanks before every round.
Another important thing to add is to make sure your batteries are fully charged. One way to make sure the batteries are charged is to have a specific setup on your pit table. You can line the batteries up in an organized way from most charged to least charged, putting the battery that was from the previous match at the end of the line on chargers, so that you will always have a charged battery in your robot.
Yeah, I know several times we've actually gone out to a match with a dead battery, and it just spikes down to 4, and we're like, oh no, you know, stuck in the middle of the field, can't really move. And that's just a problem that can be easily prevented.
Another thing that FIRST provides for teams is a webcast that shows how the game is being played at certain regionals across the nation. Catching a glimpse of the matches might even help you strategize and get your head in the game for future matches.
Yeah, I know. One year we watched some of those webcasts, and they really helped tell us a lot about how the game was played. And we had some strategy going into the competition rather than just jumping in blind. Well, before the competition, you needed some things to do for the competition, like make signs and stuff for your team spirit. If you've ever been to a FIRST competition, you know it's loud as anything in there. Teams cheering and whatnot, some teams louder than others.
Team spirit is very important.
That's right. And one thing you can do before the competition is make posters and signs that you can hold up or hang at the competition facility. I mean, it's really easy to do. You can just get some post-mortem markers, make signs of your team number on them, a sponsor, your team name.
Just make sure you don't include any noisemakers, as FIRST deems them illegal.
At the competition, one of the main areas of focus is the pits. The pits is, you know, where you're going to do all your repairs, where your team's going to put up your match list. Because oftentimes, it's a place where you can just meet. You can say, okay, after this match, everyone go to the pit, quick team meeting. Well, there's several things you need to know about the pits. Like, for one thing, the pits can get very crowded. You know, we're not allotted that much space. So you really gotta have the best organization that space, you know, space with your tools and whatnot, but also with people in there. You wanna have a solid list of jobs that you want people to do. Like, okay, these three people are gonna be on the media team. They're gonna be in the stands, filming and taking pictures. These three people are going to be the mechanical team, and they're going to be in the pit most of the time. And, you know, so on and so forth for other jobs your team may need. This will help limit the flow of people into the pit. Also with the pit, you're going to want to make sure you have someone there at all times, just in case a judge happens to stop over and you're in a match. You at least have one person there that can talk to the judge about whatever they're inquiring. Also, you go to the pit when you're scouting the robot, and it's good to have buttons and team giveaways. You know, every team has a button, and they're just something really easy to make. You can make a lot of them pretty quick, and you can just have a big bucket. People say, okay, you know, I'm going to give you our button, you give us their button, and you can acquire a great collection. Also in the pits, you would have some informative posters about your team, maybe about if you do any community outreach. That's a good poster to have. A poster maybe with some of your award submissions on it. A poster with your CAD printed on it would be good to have, you know, for the judges and just for anyone else walking by can see and they can learn a little bit more about your team. You know, the pits, they want to be something that's
eye-catching
and pleasurable to the eye. You want to have, like, a color scheme going maybe or just something. I know our team, our mascot is a daisy, so we have vines and flowers everywhere. And, you know, other teams that have their themes running current through their whole pit area. Another thing you're going to do with the pit is you want to keep the pit clean, because a clean pit is usually a safe pit. Throughout the day, there's going to be, you know, metal shavings, grease spills, you know, whatever you may have that happens on the floor, and someone can trip and get hurt. So it's helpful to bring a broom with you sometimes so you can sweep that up.
Safety is very important, so it's good to keep your pit clean.
Yeah. Speaking of safety in the pit, at a FIRST competition, you always have to have goggles on in the pit.
Always wear your safety glasses.
Always, always, always. And oftentimes, it's a good idea to have, say, a big, you know, an area that's easily accessible for your team and everyone knows where it is, that they can get their goggles. So, in case someone who doesn't go to the pit all often doesn't have goggles, they can just go in there, oh, you know, have safety glasses.
One thing that's important to keep in your pit are spare parts in case your robot breaks down and you need a quick fix.
Yeah, FIRST allows you to have a fix-it window. So that fix-it window should really be used to your advantage for making spare parts and stuff. If you have a part of your robot that you suspect's gonna break easily or prone to breaking or wear and tear because you use it so often, you might want to make a few extras of that parts if you can. And, you know, you just want to have extra nuts and bolts anything that you may think you need.
It's always better to have extra.
Yeah, it's better to have extra than not enough.
One thing that your team can do is, in your pit, post a schedule of events for the day so that your team is always aware of what's going on and where they need to be when they need to be. A simple flyer hanging up in the pit that can easily be seen by team members is one suggestion.
Another suggestion may be to have a whiteboard hanging in your pit somewhere. A whiteboard is pretty easy to use and easy to change. You know, just have a dry erase marker with you, and you can write all your matches on there. They may change or something like that, and you can write important notes if you're having, like, a team lunch. A note to all the team members that lunch will be at 12:30. So that's very important. And as for scheduling, everything that we've talked about here cannot be completed without a schedule. If you have a schedule or a flowchart, you know, showing your progression from ship date to competition and have everything on track, then you're going to be ahead of the game. And you're not going to be running around with just a list, okay, we just need to get this done. But you need to have an order to that list and how you're going to do things. All right, guys, so I'm Aaron.
And I'm Allie.
And that looks like it'll do it for the first ever DaisyCast. I hope you enjoy it. Tune in next time.
Daisy out. And that was DaisyCast, ladies and gentlemen. They did a good job, and I hope to see them in Atlanta so I can personally shake their hands. This is Matt Kress signing off.
This is Adam Richards signing off. Make sure you get those pictures so I can beat Matt.
This is Joseph Matt signing off, knowing that I really am the sexier First Cast host.
And this is Jeff Rodriguez trying to avoid any pictures at UTC.